strategy, and sector and company performance. Before that, he spent 15 years in the oil and gas industry, specializing in geophysics, engineering, and operations, working for Western Geophysical, Sun Oil Company, ECL Limited, and Petroleum Information Corp. He's a graduate of Southern Methodist University. He's on the advisory board for the Carruth Energy Institute at SMU, and he's a member of a whole lot of stuff. I'm not going to read all of it because I have to answer it. So please help me welcome Mr. Whitman.
Thank you all for the invitation. IBC very much for the invitation to speak. I've actually gotten to do this a couple times in the past, and I learned a lot, so I always appreciate it. Especially the Well Control School, I have a soft spot. Several years ago, I was doing some work with the people at Boots and Coots, and they gave me one of their big red bags with the giant logo and my name on it. And the number of times I have let that bag go around three or four or five times at the airport and have a cute girl like one of these three sitting up front come up and say, "Do you fight fires?" Being an honest guy, I say, "Somebody's got to." So I have a great respect for what y'all do here. Do I have a clicker here?
What's up on the podium?
There we go. They asked me to talk about the market outlook. We changed the title about 2 weeks ago. It worked. I think it worked in advance. Maybe you
did. I did.
And so we have been asking ourselves every day for the past several weeks, holy crap, what's going on? So my market outlook isn't going to be, you know, right down the center of the fairway as much as some people might have expected. Not as bad as a couple years ago, though, is it? Is
no.
I'm speaking at the IEDC meeting in Amsterdam, and we're getting ready to talk, and Lisa's running the projector, and I have 37 slides. And I say, okay, first slide, he hits the button, the whole thing explodes and catches fire.
Are you going back?
I'm done with this. Go to the next one. Okay. I apologize for this. I'm the high slider, keep pushing the button. Multiple dislocations. I mean, it's not just the last 3 weeks, though. Good God, the last 3 weeks. It's really been the last 4 years. The crash of 2008, I'm going to show you some examples of what this did in a bit. But the crash of 2008, the Macondo, the worst environmental disaster that never happened. If anybody ever wonders whether God loves the oil business, the best example I can give you that answers that question, yes, is the Gulf Coast beaches today. Okay? I went down to Destin back in June, and it was work, it was hard work, but somebody had to do it. So I walked the beaches and talked to all the lifeguards and people I could find. You know, so how is the Gulf? And I got these blank looks. What do you mean? I said, well, you know, the oil spill. And they looked at me kind of funny and said, that was last year. That is dodging the most amazing bullet this industry will ever dodge, so thank that in your prayers tonight. The government, I've got a slide with a couple of quotes from one of my favorite people, Michael Bromwich. He spoke at a meeting I went to a couple months ago, and he wouldn't come in the front of the room. He insisted on being brought in back with the Secret Security Act. Well, he thought, you know, we're not that bad of guys. He doesn't have to do that. And he gets up and he gives his beautifully canned, positive speech. Everybody applauded. Said, no, we've got this guy wrong. Then the Q&A occurred. We understand why he had to have the guards walking out. After some of the comments he said, I'll bring those up in a second. The crash of 2011, and that's what we've seen here the last 3 weeks. And then the mad gyrations of the crude oil market overall. And what's interesting is with all these disruptions, the good part about for all the people in this room is we're working. working in an industry that you can dislocate all you want, and you can make prices gyrate. I'll show you an example of that. But with no offense meant, solar and wind are not going to replace the car engine you have in the car. China is going from 18 million cars on the road to 32 million cars on the road. And this isn't whether GM wants to or whether Ford can sell them. This is by government edict that, by God, they're going to build them, and that's what's going to be on the road. That alone boosts oil consumption by about 8 million barrels a day, but don't worry, we've got 4 years. So there are no alternatives. Saudi can't produce 10 million barrels a day. Libya's coming back on the market, and that'll probably depress oil prices for a little bit. But to be perfectly honest, the longer-term outlook for our industry has never been better. You've all seen the supply-demand curve where we have to be producing 120 million barrels by 2020. And we've been stuck at 82, at 83, and we hadn't been able to go past it. I'm reminded of an AGA study, there were actually three studies done back in 2000, that projected U.S. gas demand in 2010. And all of them said that we would be using 30 TCF of gas a year in the U.S. When that study was done, we were using 22. Today, we're using 22 and a half. And so don't think all these projections have to come true. And I'm not a peakist per se, but we are going to have to ration crude oil going forward by price. And that's the most positive thing, and it will overcome multiple dislocations. This is the 2008 crash. It took most people by surprise, and it was ugly. The universe of stocks I have up here, Transocean, BP, Cameron, Halliburton, and Weatherford, and I'm using those because I'm going to show you a Macondo slide in a second. But in that drop that arrow is supposed to be pointing to, those companies lost 47% of their market capitalization because of the credit crisis that occurred. Those same companies lost another 47% in only 12 weeks when the Macondo incident occurred. So when you think about it, the biggest economic crash since the early 30s was no worse to the industry than the Macondo incident. We've already talked about how there's no oil anywhere around. And so It to me demonstrates how brutal markets can be, but it also to me explains how misunderstood this industry was at the time. This is just a slide showing you Transocean stock price and the oil price, and the point to note in there is that drop in Transocean's price is from Macondo. You can see how it's diverged from oil. It's come down lately. I'm not saying that the offshore market hasn't been challenged lately, but I wanted everybody to see at least what oil had done. This group obviously isn't talking just about offshore. One of the slides this morning talked about the frack industry, and I love one of the speakers this morning. I too am stunned that you haven't seen the headlines that the hydraulic fracturing in Pennsylvania caused the earthquake, but I would be willing to put money that you will see it in the next week. They have to have time to think about it. The good part now is that the offshore industry's in the clear. We're issuing permits, and for some odd reason, I don't understand, but I'm not going to argue with, the environmentalists aren't coming after the offshore drilling, like a whole lot of people had expected. They are, however, going after hydraulic fracturing, the EPA regulation of the government overall. As part of my serving as a vet on the advisory board of the McGuire Institute, we had a think tank group from Washington come through, and they had already been to NYU, UCLA, and A&M. And they were coming through Dallas and talking to SMU. And the topic came up of hydraulic fracturing. And somebody mentioned, do you realize that if you ban hydraulic fracturing, then everybody's utility bills will double or triple? And a couple years' worth of natural gas. And that's when we realized that if you can hydraulically fracture these wells, you have about 7 years of natural gas. And there was a silence in the room, and several of the people said, "We didn't know." This was the fourth stop on a national tour by a national policy think tank specifically to get people's thoughts on what regulation they need to recommend to Washington. So if anybody thinks that these are well-educated people who understand the nuances of what we're doing, you would be embarrassingly mistaken. The good part, though, turns out, and this is where we were, this just shows the change in complexity. It's kind of a takeoff on the fracturing issues. You can see here that oil drilling in the United States has shot up. I think it's going to plateau for a little bit, for a couple of months, and continue to shoot up. In the last 25 years, we've successfully screwed up the gas market 13 of them. We have so successfully found gas at such a good price that we created a gas sausage that I lived through, and now a gas bubble. So we have been so efficient, we've nailed ourselves about 80% of the last 25 years. Now we are back to finding a hydrocarbon that is imminently more difficult to screw up. We can drill our tails off for oil in the U.S., and while you can argue that differentials may widen between types of crude oil, it will take a great deal of drilling before Saudi is really concerned about us becoming the swing producer again. So I fully expect that yellow line to continue going up at a fairly rapid pace. Most people seem to think that we quit drilling for oil in the early 80s because we liked gas better. The people who are old in this room, I guess the people who are young in this room, that wasn't the reason. It's because we couldn't find any economic oil. We now have 17 years of identified drilling locations for oil. You guys know this better than I do. You look at your own company, we look at all the companies. 17 years of inventory of identified drilling locations. That's a statement that you couldn't make in oil in this country for the last 40 years. In terms of complexity, you can see the horizontal rig count. When I grew up, slant hole drilling was how you stole oil from your neighbors. And now it's primary drilling that we do in the U.S. Commodity price outlook, I can't have a guy like me come up and talk about this without throwing this one up. Red is the oil futures. There is an issue right now, and that is that oil has come down, and when oil comes down, people in the oil business go, gosh, I wonder how low it's going to go. And then when you have a market correction like you did last week, which is the market saying that growth is going to be slower than we thought, then everybody goes, my gosh, oil could weaken further. And it's not that oil will weaken, the future strip changes every day. But it is the fact that you're going to have a lot of you people in the room and your companies say, well, we're still going to drill all the wells we were going to drill. But if prices don't move up, we probably won't drill it as fast. And this is going to probably happen, or at least be warned about over the next several months, at a point in time where we have been adding capacity in some of the oil field service segments at an exceptionally rapid rate. And for those people who remember what happens in the confluence of events of a slowing market at a time of accelerating capacity additions. And so right now you're looking at a market that is worried about North American outlook in 2012. And talking to David Williams earlier, I think the oil rig count in the U.S. is going to stay at these fabulous levels, previous slide, fabulous levels, for another couple of years, okay? But I'm Mr. Market, and I don't pay you for staying good. I pay high multiples, and I pay buy stocks that are getting better. And so I want everybody to get better faster. Can we go back one? I want everybody to get better faster. And you can see with that oil outlook, it makes it difficult for everybody to get better faster. And so from a market outlook perspective, we think that the next 3 or 4 or 5 months could be difficult for the energy business. Now, most of you won't notice it if you don't open the envelope that has your 401k in it. And my advice is that you don't open that envelope anyway, because by the time you've gotten the statement, it's too late to sell. There's nothing you can do about it. Don't impress yourself. It'll come back. But we do think that the stocks and the energy markets, in terms of the stock market activity, has more downside than upside over the short term. Long term, again, most of the people in this room won't notice it. You'll continue to work through it and do well. Oil prices can't come down for long or by much. They don't have to come down long or for much to scare people just a little bit. So we're very positive on the longer term outlook. And then there's natural gas. That's that yellow line that seems incredibly flat around $4. I went and listened to Range Resources do a presentation the other day. And after listening to them talk and show maps and everything for about 2 hours, my first thought was, this is a pretty good company. And my second thought was, the gas prices may never hit six again. We are discovering shales every third day. Now we've got to find the different regions for shales. We're finding shales uphole, downhole. We're finding liquids rich is the latest buzzword in the financial markets. Liquids rich. I have to keep reminding people that that's an adjective modifier. The noun is still gas. Nobody wants to talk about that. The EIA data is going to come out this week, and it's going to show gas production in June was up another 1%. We go screwing ourselves again. So gas production has continued to go up even with prices flat. The good part on gas is I can hedge my next year's gas production at $5.50. And at $5.50, just about everything is economic except the Haynesville. My problem with oil is I can hedge next year at $83. And I'm getting $83 now. So I got no upside in oil in the hedging program. And keep in mind, these days, this isn't the oil companies of the past that used to do something, what's that called? Oh, they drill a dry hole. We don't do that anymore onshore in the U.S. I literally had a company tell me the other day we hadn't drilled a dry hole in 7 years. I told them I didn't think they were an oil company. But these are manufacturing companies now, and so for them to hedge 60, 70, 75, 80% of production isn't odd. That's how they generate the cash flow that these projects need. And with that gas curve, it's difficult, and with that oil curve, it's difficult. They will move up at some point. But in my business, the biggest difficulty, the greatest difficulty, is predicting timing, and that still is the issue. So over the last several years, we've gone from vertical wells to horizontal wells, and gas to oil, the BTU equivalency is 6 to 1. 6 to 1, it's always averaged 7 to 1. Now it's 13 or 14 to 1. So in a mathematical world, which I live in, nothing correlates. It's very hard to come up and predict things if you don't have some historical correlation or leading indicator. One of the things that still does work, though, is global GDP and global oil demand still correlate, and especially directional. When one's going up, the other's going up. When one's going down, the other's going down. And that's on an annual basis, and that's pretty much set in stone. And so that's the concern we have over the next period of time. Now, you look at these numbers, 58, 147, to 34, to 114, to 85, in less than 5 years. I remember years ago, people said, we don't care what the price is, just give us stability. Now we want stability and high price. But the ability of any company to plan effectively, and by effectively, I mean you plan 1 year, and what you plan comes about the next in a way that you execute optimally. No one has been able to do that over the last 5 years. Nor has it inspired any confidence in the financial markets at all. We know one thing for sure. Nobody can predict oil prices. I tell people I'm either way too smart or way too stupid to try. Though I think I just did over a short period of time, but y'all know I'm going to be wrong, so it's all right. But oil price fluctuations, and now, I'll say this for a slide, I've got it. Brent versus WTI is a different story as well. And while it won't directly impact everybody in this room, in 3 years it will have some people on one side of the room who benefit from a higher oil price and one side who are benefiting from a good oil price, but not nearly as good as their evil twins on the other side. Natural gas, nobody cares. We have oil to drill for. We don't have to drill for natural gas anymore. So this is great. We can produce out of source rocks. I'm a reservoir engineer and geophysicist by background. Produce out of source rocks. That's something you couldn't have said 6 years ago with a straight face in front of a group of reservoir engineers. That was, there were jokes about that. And now we're producing them. And again, do we care? I had said a couple of years ago that I don't think we would ever export natural gas. I don't think we would ever export LNG. I'm still not sure we're going to. But I'd say it's at least 50-50 now. You've got the Cheniere facility permitted. You're going to get Kitimat on the Canadian coast permitted. You've got three more pending. And when you look at a basin map and you look at the number of well locations, it may take $6 gas, but when you consider what LNG is selling for, we may actually end up, and I'm old, so this is an amazing statement to me, being an exporter of natural gas. And just the idea that that was in some idiot's mind a 50-50 possibility is a dramatic change in our business. So it's lower economic growth means lower demand, means lower pricing, which means lower capex, which means lower earnings. Now, in terms of capex, if you're deep water offshore, you probably won't notice, but you've got your own issues. How many people deal with the offshore? Okay. Post Macondo, how much of your costs going up? 5%? 10%? 20. And this is, that's scary is what it is. So you're going to absorb a lot of that drilling capex in just higher cost, not more wells. There's still going to be some service companies. Anybody from National Oil Barco Bradman to show themselves in there? Okay. The monopoly company, I love it. So companies will still do well, but our business makes the most money for everybody involved when we're drilling more wells. Expensive wells are nice, complex wells are nice, but everybody in this room has a key part of their job is to make that more efficient and make that better. So if the number of wells you're trying to optimize and getting your cost and efficiencies down, and that's where we all make the most amount of money, and regulation and additional cost isn't helping. And that's going to be an issue, like I say, over the next 4 to 6 months. Okay. WTI Brent. You've probably all read the stories. Cushing, Oklahoma ended up being the home and hub for pricing of WTI. It'll hold 42 million barrels. Now, they're rapidly growing capacity at Cushing, and it's going to be at 56 million barrels in 3 years. Okay. But in terms of a hub, it's small. The other issue is that the oil that comes into Cushing, part of that oil now comes from the Bakken, which has seen an absolute explosion of drilling activity, and Canadian oil sands, which has seen the same explosion. And so not only are you seeing increased capacity oil production come into Cushing, that capacity is growing at an exceptionally fast rate. We don't really have an efficient way to take oil from Cushing to the Gulf Coast. The XL Keystone Pipeline has been proposed, and the environmentalists are against it so much it's absurd. Does anybody know that there were 100 protesters arrested in Washington, D.C. last weekend who were protesting the Keystone XL pipeline? Look how many hands go up in the room, and you would think that would be an issue. The guy in the back's a little bit late, but good. It was in all the environmental press, which tells me that y'all don't take a whole lot of subscriptions to environmental magazines. It was in all of that press. They have had demonstrations on the Texas Gulf Coast against the pipeline. They were standing between two refinery outlets. I didn't really get the point, but so you've got Conoco, who can give up their pipeline and reverse the flow, and it would benefit everybody but Conoco. And so there is nothing that's going to, in the next year and a half or 2 years, relieve the pressure on Cushing. And so WTI oil prices, which we all think about as our oil price, is going to be in relative decline versus Brent. And you can see that averaging plus or minus $2 a barrel for about 16 years, the spread is now $25 a barrel. And like I say, oddly enough, and it's the mechanism of an archaic system of pricing for WTI, but that is likely to stay the case. And I mentioned the people who are selling their oil based on Brent or LSS will be sitting on this side of the room grinning next year. And the people over here who are selling WTI will be asking, how can they get transferred? So keep in mind that's going to continue to be an issue. Okay. I am a positive person in general. I'm a positive on the outlook of the business. I am positive on the outlooks of the market. This is fine. I'm positive on the outlook of the markets. There's a huge amount of oil and gas left to produce. The CapEx that the industry spends continues to go up. I don't mention it here, but the technology involved is so much different than it was just a few years ago. I go back to mentioning we're producing source rock, you know, around the country, and well. If you had told me 10 years ago that an Appalachian gas well was going to IP at 18 million a day, I would have probably asked you 18 million what? Because it couldn't be natural gas. There's no substitute. The ANGA, which is the American Natural Gas Association, which is the new lobbying group that was started by Aubrey McClendon and the Southwestern people and the ranch people, it got awards last year for being the most effective new lobbying group ever in the history of mankind or something. But they're making a real dent in trying to create demand for natural gas. We shot ourselves in the foot for years. We said it's scarce, and because of that, it's expensive. And so we're going to have to get $10 an MCF. And so all the utilities said, coal, bye. And we shot ourselves in the foot. And now we've got lots of it. That's like, you don't understand. We got lots of it. It's cheap. They said, oh, well, next time we build some electrical power generation, we'll think about natural gas. But you missed the last cycle. I live in Dallas. We had a mayor a couple years ago. And she was a very idealistic, smart woman. Jerry Jones came and said, I want to build a new football stadium. Will you help me? And she said, no. You're a billionaire sports team owner. I'm going to cut off my nose to spite my face. And she did. And they built in Arlington, 30 minutes away. The next mayor came in and said, you know, we've got to figure out a way to make the Cowboys move back. He was laughed out of town just about for the remark. Jerry Jones says, you know, in 40 years, we'll call you up again. In this industry, if we don't start selling gas on long-term contracts directly to utilities, that may be our next best chance. But just so you know, you now have a well-funded, active lobbying group trying to make that happen. And the oil that's left to produce, I mean, I'm a big fan of improving economics, and I understand the high marginal cost of oil sets the price for everything else. People thought for years Saudi Arabia set the price of oil. I would disagree. The North Sea set the price for oil. It cost, and I'm going back a long way, $17 to produce in the North Sea and $2 to produce in Saudi Arabia. You don't have to take much of an economics course to understand who supplies that last 1% or 2% is the one who captures the price. That's still, those rules of economics, while most of the government's rules of economics don't seem to work, this is one that still should. And so I can't stand here today and tell you which is the high-cost incremental barrel of crude after the last couple of weeks. I'm not sure. I don't know if it's oil sands. I don't know if it's North Sea. But I don't think it's $40, and I don't think it's $50. And so the outlook will clarify itself at some point. This is just a slide I threw in there. I apologize. Number of discoveries in the Gulf of Mexico, if you would. This just shows the migration of international activity. We are becoming a more global business. I had a slide at one point that showed the intensity of the rig count versus the reserves in the U.S. versus the rig count versus the reserves in the rest of the world. And the point of it was is the rest of the world wins. I think I probably did that slide back in 2000, so I have this slide in there just to show I was right about something. I use Oceaneering, because they're not a rig company, and they're not an oil company. I'd argue they're a technology company. I understand they get swept up in a lot of things that go on offshore. But I think it's interesting to see what has happened. And you can see, we've got the drop down in 2008. Everybody got a haircut. But you can see what's happened to a technology company that supports offshore drilling. That is one of the steepest slopes you'll ever see. And the likelihood that it can reverse itself anytime in the next several years is very low. This is the perennial jackup slide. This just shows the delivery of jackups versus the fleet. The next one should show semi-submersibles. And the last one should show drill ships. Here we go. It is interesting to note that this last wave of construction, drill ships have far exceeded the number of semis ordered and built. Now, there's some August drilling people in the audience, and so this is a generalization, but you generally use drill ships more for exploration, especially historically, than you did semis. So we look at this relative slide and see the pickup in drill ships. It's also higher deck capacity. There's a bunch of different reasons, but for the optimist in me, this is a great indication that that is confirmed by our discussions with service companies and the major E&P companies, that exploration is in fact not dead, that while we're finding shales in North America and now around the world, that the technology we have in deep water and drilling deep on the shelf is going to continue exploration offshore in a big way. Offshore construction backlog, the E&C business, this is intended just to demonstrate how you can see it's by quarter, how solid this business has been, and this is the underpinnings. You have to have the infrastructure before you produce. So we watch this as a leading indicator. When this starts to trend down, it's because they're getting messages from the companies that you work for that they don't need to build infrastructure as quickly. We haven't seen that yet. Relative performance. Okay, on the left-hand side, you have the subsectors. Far right-hand side, year to date. Anybody feel like they've had a 29% down year? Other than in their stock portfolio, you can see that land rigs, because of the excitement over North America, have by far been the best subsector. Nobody else can get a 700% improvement in their operating line through the course of the cycle. And you can see the Norwegians down at the bottom, offshore rigs come in down 11%, seismic, which is a leading indicator for exploration, down 26%. The bad part is, see that all E&P down at the bottom? Those are the guys who spend the CapEx. Now, I don't know about most of you guys in the room, but I know if my stock portfolio is down 29%, I'm probably going to be a little bit more cautious about where I spend my money for some foreseeable future until I can make some of that back. That's one of the things that makes us concerned near term about spending activity, or at least the announcements of spending activity. And then on the far right, you can see the stocks have overreacted far in excess of what the commodities have done. Oil, gas, and the Dow Jones, you can see, is down 3%. So people look at this and immediately think, well, this is overdone. It's fairly common. We always overreact. But this is what the stocks have done here today. So from a market outlook point of view, the smart guy says, aha, I'm going to buy the ones that are performing the best because they'll bounce back the best. That's the same guy who says, I've come up with a new system to beat the casino. Okay? It sounds great. And if you can sit there and double down every time you lose until you finally win, there's a saying that somebody gave me in a book when I first got into this business, the market can stay irrational longer than you can stay solvent. That's the concern in the markets today, and that's why nobody's stepping in to buy these stocks. The first thing they did, they sold off everybody who was risky. Then they sold off everybody who had any kind of excess debt. Now they're selling off everybody in North America. At some point, they will have sold everybody off. Then it's time to buy. Help is on the way. I won't leave this. Bromwich has made some statements that defy description. At the meeting I referred to at the beginning, he came out and said it was sheer blind luck that this industry has been as lucky as it's been and not had more accidents. seen an industry in my life, and I have been a business analyst for the last 20-some odd years, I have never seen an industry that cared more about safety than this business. And it was after making those comments that he had to be escorted off the stage, if you would. But it's an interesting business. We've got shelf to deep shelf. I'm not ready to buy Jim Bob stock yet, but he's doing some interesting things, and some companies definitely benefit from the effort. Brazil, 28 rigs, 21 rigs, going to 46 rigs, pick a number, they're all huge. Now, West Africa is the geological twin sister of Brazil, so we've got years and years of another Brazil ahead of us, and that'll be true until we prove it wrong, if we do. And we're drilling now in Suriname, Guyana, some of these places I had to look up, Greenland, Cyprus, in places that when I was in the oil business, we all knew that oil didn't exist. And so the business stays interesting. You guys know better than me the advancements in technology. But from a financial market outlook, the good part is Macondo educated everybody. Somebody made the joke the other day, said I couldn't believe it, but my wife knows what a BOP is. It educated the industry. And since there's no oil on the beaches, it wasn't a painful education. And so now most people on the street know what a deep water rig is, they know what a kill shot is, they know what a BOP is, and they appreciate the complexity of this business. And for years we made the joke that selling books online was high tech, but drilling in 10,000 feet of water was dumb iron. And I'm happy to say I think we finally turned the corner on that education. Thank you very much. I've got 3 minutes and 40 seconds if anybody wants to ask a question. Somebody bail me out and ask me a question.
All right.
All the money, the federal deficit, and the money we spent for TARPs and economic stimulus programs, you know, we haven't got the bill for that yet. My taxes haven't gone up. I understand we're just borrowing money to do all that. What happens if somebody quits loaning money to us?
The last 3 weeks, that's the foreshadowing of this occurring. The fear is that China will slow to a GDP rate of only 6 to 7% instead of 9. While that doesn't sound like much, they're the growth engine, and that would be, I won't say disastrous, but surely bad. Italy is the second largest bond market in the world behind us, the second largest bond market. And they announced they were going to pass a balanced budget amendment last week. They don't have amendments, but that's what they even call it. The European banks are in significant trouble. Japan, the saving grace of Japan, their debt to GDP is among the worst. The good part is that though their people own 90% of the debt rather than foreign governments. I have to think about why that's good, but that's how twisted around. They've got the worst debt to GDP, but we're consoled by the fact that they own the debt. So, somehow you have to work out the European Union before all this can work and everything goes up. We don't have the same issues here, but we have no jobs. The stimulus program, according to the government's numbers, spent $275,000 for every job they created. Their multiplier effect was 0.16. The fear is that tomorrow Bernanke at Jackson Hole is going to announce QE3. If he announces QE3, it's going to be a debacle because we're going to have to go borrow money to do it. If he doesn't announce it, it's going to be a debacle because then we won't have a stimulus program and we'll go into recession. So we're all looking forward to the debacle of tomorrow and hoping he can pull a rabbit out of his hat. But it's not uncertainty so much about this industry. That really doesn't exist today. That's the good part. But there is a huge amount of uncertainty about the global economy. We have outspent for years. All the austerity measures that have been proposed in Greece and Spain and Italy have gotten a big middle finger from the people saying no. And so you have to fix those things before the stock market is fixed. And I'm going to fix them. Please. payment systems worked pretty quickly, we would minimize the damage. But the damage would be huge. Because we said this really shouldn't have happened once. And if it happens twice, we're going to see regulation that you can't imagine. And while I don't understand why the environmentalists aren't taking a more active role, I'm happy about it, that won't be the case if it happens again. So under no circumstances can we have another Macondo in the U.S. That's the problem. And so we all have to insure against that cost of failure. Yeah.
This will be our last question.
Kevin Picaro, Coast Guard. As a supply and demand person, I heard recently that if we have an abundance of supply with, you know, opening up all the drilling, that prices can get down to $2 a gallon. I just wanted to get your comment on that.
Michelle Bachmann said that if she's elected president, gasoline prices will go back to $1.70 a gallon. Not in my lifetime. No way. And for a politician to promise that? So the answer, unfortunately,